This is the State of Things broadcasting from Triad Stage in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stasio, and this weekend, the streets of downtown Greensboro are going to be peppered with writers, readers, poets, and performers. It's the second annual literary festival, Greensboro Bound. This year's headliners include novelist Zadie Smith and Grammy winner Rhiannon Giddens in conversation with singer-songwriter Ani DeFranco. Greensboro Bound is also a chance for local writers to share their work and talk together about their craft. Joining us now is one of those writers, Crystal A. Smith, a poet and author of speculative fiction. Her new collection of short stories is called Two Moons Stories. Crystal is going to moderate a panel and host a fiction writing workshop at the festival, but first she joins the State of Things. Crystal, welcome. This is now a familiar event in its second year, and you were involved in the first one.
Yes.
Will you paint a picture for us?
It's an open oasis of books and readers and people who just absolutely love literature and being in community with each other. Greensboro Bound does a great job of organizing. Everything's walkable. There are people just at the ready to help you figure out where you're going. And they even have an app so that you can keep track of where you're going.
Are you going to bump into people who are like reading books and not looking
yes.
where they're going, just smacking into one
yes,
another,
falling? You absolutely will.
That's great. Now, your book is called Two Moons Stories. How would you describe the book?
It is a collection of short stories that embodies transformation. It is very black. It is very queer. It is very pro-feminist and femme. And there is something for everybody.
Will you read for us?
I certainly will. This is from Catch Me If You Can. Jaleesa chattered up at the sky and transformed in a matter of steps, a wild thing under the moon, calling out to her mate and to any creature within earshot, "Come on, chase me." Jaleesa was still two-legged, but with the most gorgeous silky red sunset fur all over. Her breasts and stomach took on a pale opal-colored fur that shimmered when she moved. She was double-tailed, each one twitching and testing the air. Jaleesa laughed out into the night, imagining what the two tails must look like, but not wanting to stop yet to see. Her body moved faster under its skin, more natural than in the day. She was free and fluid as the fox in ways that she'd never be as human.
Crystal A. Smith reading from her collection of short stories called Two Moons Stories. One of the North Carolina writers appearing at the Greensboro Bound Literary Festival kicks off Thursday and runs through the weekend. So you said something just before you read that is a marvelous paradox for us. You said it is queer, it is black, it is feminist, and it's for everyone.
Yes.
Let's have all of that now. Because you've talked, let's talk about the fact that it is more difficult, and you found that if you go into the everyone space for publishing, it doesn't always work if you're queer, black, and feminist. So talk about
Correct.
That. Talk about the discrimination part, and then we'll get into the everyone part.
Yeah, we often get told that our work doesn't resonate with the everyday person. It's too black, or it's too queer, or it's too uncomfortable for white people. And that
you don't want to make the white people uncomfortable. I'm just saying.
I do my best every day. But it's so strange to me that, growing up and even now, that anywhere I look, I can see things that are not necessarily made for me, but I can relate to them and I can understand them. And so I don't understand how me, being, a black person, a black woman, a lesbian, I don't understand how some of my stories don't resonate with others.
So talk more about that, because I think there's real power in what you're saying here, is that this does resonate with all of us. This is all of our story. How so, and what are we missing when we put you in a category and say, oh, that's not for me?
Well, it's the human factor. We're all human. We all come from a base where we have experiences, no matter how different. We can see what it is that connects us. And I think that's important to look at when we're listening to music, when we're looking at art, when we're reading stories by different people. We can all make that connection. We might have to get out of our comfort zone a little bit, but we can do it.
Have you experienced that as a writer where, you know what you've got here, and if everybody could see it, they'd get it, but I got to get through these silos and through these channels in order to get to a readership. Have you found that kind of, I mean, you talked about, I think you used a few words that, you know, you make people uncomfortable. Have you heard those as critiques of your writing when you go to publishers?
Yeah. Sometimes in workshops, people say, oh, Crystal, this doesn't sound like you. Well, I exist in multitudes, mm-hmm. you know, and to open your ears and to feel what someone is putting out, what they're you know, chancing to put out into the world, you really have to give it a chance.
But that also means that in order, because of the way we have channeled and described very carefully the kinds of literature that you're going to get and the kinds of music that you're going to find, that it's a little bit on us to say, huh, this doesn't sound like me, think I'll read it.
Yes, think outside the box.
Jumping outside of
Absolutely.
Your comfort zone. You're making a white guy uncomfortable again, but okay, I'm going to do it. Would you read something else for us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This is from A Rose for Brescia. It's a little bit more action-packed. Brescia bursts through the door leading out to the patio. Right in front of her, a dark figure hunched over a bush and dropped flowers onto a white cloth on the ground. Silver blades flashed in the moonlight, a weapon, shears, or garden knife. Brescia didn't hold back. Her first blow landed between the neck and shoulder of the trespasser. Get out of my garden, she yelled, rearing back to strike again. A second blow was lost to the quick movement of the trespasser. Brescia's fist slipped through the stretchy cloak, hiding their identity. Her fist fell straight into the stiff, sticky grass. She pushed off the ground, growling, determined to fight. Then her eyes fell to the cut flowers on the ground, waiting to be retrieved. The cloaked one followed Brescia's eyes. They both lunged for the roses. They both scrambled toward the scrap of cloth, each trying to reach it before the other one. Brescia was almost impressed with the thief. Their movement was fluid, quick, steady, but Brescia was just as fast, just as smooth.
Crystal A. Smith reading from her collection of short stories, Two Moons Stories, one of the North Carolina writers appearing at Greensboro Bound, the literary festival that kicks off this Thursday and runs through the weekend. You're also going to be hosting a fiction writing workshop. So what do you tell people about writing fiction?
I say get out your pens and pencils and computers and let's do it.
How long have you been writing?
I have been writing since I was a wee little thing, mm-hmm. writing on the wall with my mom's lipstick and getting into big
Ooh,
trouble.
That has ended a lot of writers' careers, you know.
It has.
Good for you. Do you remember what you wrote now that I think about it?
I think I was writing The Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Ah,
I think
it was okay. Spider. You don't want to forget that. It's very smart. Crystal A. Smith has read from her collection of short stories, and as I say, she's going to be on a panel, moderating a panel, about fiction writing workshop, at a fiction writing workshop. But joining the conversation now is poet and author Valerie Neiman. She describes her latest novel as a zombie eco-justice romance set in West Virginia. Oh, that book again. Valerie will also be at the Greensboro Bound Festival talking about her book, To the Bones, and she's going to be on two panels, a creative writing professor at North Carolina A&T State University. Welcome, Valerie. I guess we've heard all we need to hear about To the Bones, but perhaps you could tell us more.
Well, I lived and worked in West Virginia for nearly 30 years, born in northern Appalachia. And one thing that we're hearing a lot about Appalachia now is that it doesn't live up to the stereotypes. There's a big debate after Hillbilly Elegy about how the area was depicted. And my book comes out from West Virginia University Press, which also put out a book called Appalachian Reckoning, which is a response. Because Appalachia is a diverse place. It's cold, but it's also high tech. It's the opioid epidemics. It's also wonderful universities. It's wonderful natural areas. So, and in terms of people, there are gay Appalachians, and yes, there are black Appalachians, and people from all over the world. So I think that's one of the things in the book that I'm sort of playing with, the perceived stereotypes as a stranger comes in to the state and immediately ends up in trouble. And he has certain expectations of where he is and what will happen. And then he runs into real West Virginians who become allies as well as enemies in this story.
When you approach, you talked about some of the stereotypes that you might want to push back on. How did you start this book? Did it start from that plane, or did it start with the characters? Where does this book start?
It started under the ground, where nearly everything I do ends up or starts. I seem to have a predilection for that. The man wakes up in a mine crack. which I used to say if I was going to murder somebody in West Virginia, I was going to throw them down a mine crack. And I had one at the back of my farm handy, so I could have done that. But it's just where the earth subsides when they take the coal out. And they can be very deep and also quite inaccessible. So he wakes up, he's in a hole in the ground, and he soon finds out that it's full of bones. So where does he go from here? Well, first you have to get out. And then you have to find people. And so that's where the book started.
Live people.
Live people.
You want to find live
people. As opposed to non-live.
The living dead. Can I ask you to read for us?
Okay. This is a little bit from the point of view of Lorana, who is the woman he meets first off when he walks up the road or staggers because he has some problems that way. And he runs into this sweepstakes parlor, goes in, and at one point he's sort of taken aback by the problems there. The acid mine drainage has ruined the river and people without jobs and whatever. So he asks, how can people let things go on like this? How can they stand it? We can't, really. We cuss and gripe, and lots of folks leave, always have done. But we still love these hills, more than you can imagine. We make a home here because it is home, not because it's easy. We grow up learning to fish, hunt ramps, shake down apples. We build our homes in places that don't make economic sense. And we dig coal, because that's what we've done for generations. And there's pride in having the skill and guts to do that, even when we know the cost. Outsiders say we're fatalistic or just backward, that we keep mining for the money even when it's destroying our land. What they don't get is the pride part, for a man to go under the earth like his daddy and earn a good living for his family. So yeah, we know the mines poison the rivers, tear up the roads, wreck our lungs. No one knows that better or feels the pain of it worse. It hurts to see the damage, but it's worse when the mines close and there's no place to work, and families slip away one at a time till there's not half a town left.
As writer Valerie Neiman reading from her new novel, To the Bones, she's going to be one of the North Carolina authors participating in Greensboro Bound. A literary festival kicks off Thursday, and it runs through the weekend. Of course, we have information about it at our website, stateofthings.org. You talk beautifully, and I think the text reads beautifully about this paradox, in the sense that we all have that somebody else doesn't care, right? That people who aren't voting don't care. That people who are living in these circumstances, how do they vote against themselves? We hear that often. But do you have to sort of tackle that character by character? What is the internal dialogue about how much we care and how much pain it causes us to feel that hurt every single day and be, you know, in some cases impotent against mm-hmm. change?
Well, the main characters in this book are Lorana and the outsider, Derek, and then two other people, a reporter and a former police officer. And as a former reporter, that's where I really came to know West Virginia, because I was up, down, and around it. I went down in the working mines. I was down in a mine 2 miles when they hit methane, and the power cut off, and you're there in the dark, and you can hear the mountain moving over above you. You can hear it groan. I've been out on the river. I've covered murders. I've covered coal mine accidents and wrecks. And so you really get to know this passion. If you scratch a mountaineer just a little bit, no matter how they say, well, I'm glad I moved to California or wherever, they're going to say, I miss it. I miss it terrible, because it is family, it's tradition, it's roots in the land. It's the little churches, the graveyards, the schools, things that have knit people together, and which is something that I think we've lost a lot of in America, is that kind of connection.
Well, in the sense that somebody else is feeling just as deeply as you and maybe just as powerless as you, and maybe that's the problem, that we'd all like to change these things. And the people who are, you know, maybe our mutuality is in our impotence, our powerlessness. I wonder how much of that, though, for you as a writer, obviously you've thought deeply about it. As a reporter, you've had to think critically about it. And you have the language skills to express yourself beautifully. Where do you start? Do you start with the idea, or once this character emerges from the crack, is it all plot from that point, or are you constantly engaging these deeper ideas as you write?
I think they go together. I did say when I started this book, I want to have fun with it. I was emerging from a difficult novel, and I said, I want to write something that's going to come out of my experience without research and that I can have some fun with. And so I love science fiction and fantasy and horror, not the real splattery stuff, but the more psychological stuff. And so this book kind of pulls them all in. And in fact, one reviewer even pointed out that it's a Western, and indeed it is a sort of Western, because a stranger comes to town. You think of, you know, Clint Eastwood coming in. Stranger comes to town. However, he's a pretty hapless character. And the people who were there, this group of four people, take on the powers that be, just like in a Western. You think of Unforgiven or any of these great Westerns where you have powerful families jockeying for position, and you've got the little guy, the homesteader, or the people like that. So in a way, it partakes of that. Zombie literature, I love Night of the Living Dead. And this was, I actually grew up about, or lived about 60 miles from where that was filmed. And so there is a zombie, but it's not quite what people expect. And so there's a panic. Zombies, the Walking Dead are moving through the territory here, you know. I just had fun with it. And things just popped up. You know, I think the ideas, I've covered acid mine drainage. So the one that happens on the river is worse than the normal one. There's a preternatural element to it. But yeah, it's really awful stuff, and it does terrible things. And so I was working with experience, but also in the vein of the Appalachian Tall Tale. Things get bigger and get, you know, more interesting. It's a story, and that's what I had fun telling.
Well, I'm glad you have an unconventional zombie, because I'm so sick of stereotyping zombies. It's unfair to them and to us, really. We're limiting our own knowledge base. Do you talk about teaching? Because you teach at A&T, mm-hmm. and you teach creative writing. Where do you start with folks who come in and say, "Where, you know, what do I do? What do I do now?"
I tell them to start with their own stories. Yeah. Because I think I see this a lot with young people. They're immersed in media. And so when they go to write, they're writing out of that. And everyone is living, you know, in Los Angeles or New York in a penthouse apartment with a great job and all of this. And I'm saying, well, have you ever lived in L.A.? Well, no. have you ever had that kind of job? No. Well, let's start with the plain things that you know. I had one young man, and he would often preface his statements by saying he came from this little county, and there was nothing much that went on there, and they just farmed there and stuff. But when you got him talking about the farm, it was amazing, because all of this richness about how you plant tobacco and how you tend it and how you harvest it, all of this came out. It's like, it puts chills through you. It's like, write that. Take us to that place. Take us to your own people and the things that you know. And that's where the power is.
Valerie Neiman, author of To the Bones. Crystal A. Smith, the author of Two Moons Stories. Both are part of Greensboro Bound, the literary festival that gets underway in Greensboro May 16th through the 19th. We've got information at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being on our program. Just ahead, the bacteria are talking, and we're talking to a scientist who's actually listening, and we'll find out how that can save us all, or at least make us a little healthier. But first, the music of Sam Fraser. Sam?
He had a bed and she had a bed, but they didn't sleep together. They shared a life and they shared a house, and they raised my mama and my mama raised me. She liked to laugh, I liked to joke, so we got along like pigs in a poke. And when she'd giggle, her shoulders would jiggle like jello. He had a day and she had a day, they ate supper together. I'd like to think they shared dessert, but I don't really know. He took me to the farm and he showed me around, and he set me up high on the seat of a tractor. He didn't say much, but he liked wheat pennies, and for some rare reason saved balls of strain. Worked in the mill when she was a girl, with folks who didn't look a thing like her. Side by side in different worlds, like that made sense somehow. Things are different now. He had a bed and she had a bed. They didn't sleep together.